Okay, are you there now?
I'm here.
Hey, that works. How about that?
Good.
Electromagnetism at its applied science here. Now, what you're listed in on the SUNY side as an MD, but on the TV, you know, in the last few months, is that, do I call you doctor?
Well, you can call me anything you want. I do have an MD, but I obviously don't practice medicine. I'm a public health physician is how I describe myself.
They called you an environmental scientist. Well, I guess it's whatever you want.
Well, I'm that too.
All right.
But my major research focus is human disease resulting from environmental exposures.
So I'll cut to the chase because I know you have a lot of things to do there, and it's a pleasure to speak with you, though, and thank you for taking time to talk with me. But is this thing real, and if so, what are the symptoms?
Well, yes, I think it's real. It's not 100% documented. There are increasing number of people that suffer from this syndrome. Major symptom is headaches, dizziness, ringing in the ears, sense that your brain's not working quite right. I was very skeptical that the disease existed, but I've had a number of experiences which have really convinced me that it does. One was a technician from California, and I was involved in this case. It became a legal case. But this was a healthy young man who worked in at repairing radio frequency generating equipment. And he was a contractor. He got called into a Verizon facility that had, I think it was 9 generators. And they were all supposed to be turned off, but 3 of them mistakenly were not. You know, he'd been a perfectly healthy guy, a big surfer and that sort of thing. He spent about an hour in that room and then began to develop a bad headache and sort of blurred vision. He developed this syndrome, and I saw him 3 years after the event, and he still had all those symptoms. Now, when I went back to look at old scientific literature, there are a number of reports of radar people in the military from back, you know, in the 50s and 60s when radar was just coming in. Again, young, healthy people that had an acute exposure to relatively high radio frequency electromagnetic waves and then developed that syndrome that lasted basically for years. Now, what we have seen more recently is an increasing frequency of people, and it's often women, not exclusively women, but often women, who become sensitive to their cell phone. Smart meters are a big thing. They're being put on houses. These replace the old analog meters that were on houses so that you can fire the guy that goes around and read the electric meter, and it communicates with the electric company by radio frequency waves. You have Wi-Fi everywhere. You have people living in apartment buildings where there are a bunch of cell phone towers on the roof, and the people on the top floor seem to often develop these symptoms. And then you have occasional cases like this case of a child in school that just can't learn. Now, is there strong scientific evidence? I would have to say no. As a matter of fact, just a month ago, I came back from a meeting in Brussels, Belgium, that was specifically on this whole syndrome. And it's an issue all over the world, especially in developed countries. In some countries, such as Scandinavia, there are now reports that maybe up to 10% of the population show some of these signs. I think most people usually say it's 3 to 5% of the population. But, you know, the symptoms are so nonspecific that it really may be that there are people suffering from the symptoms due to the radio frequency radiation that don't attribute it to that cause. And alternatively, that there are people that just don't feel well and they're looking for something to blame and they blame the radio frequency field. So I think we really don't have a very objective test to determine whether this is real or not. Now, there have been some scientific studies that have taken people that say they're electrosensitive into laboratory settings to see whether or not they develop headaches or other symptoms when the fields are turned on if they don't know whether they're on or not. A number of those studies have not demonstrated that people really respond in the way that they say they would. But there are some that do find statistically significant development of symptoms in people that are electrosensitive. One study, which is one of the best, basically looked at 100 people and found that only less than 50% of them, if they didn't know whether they were being exposed or not, would report that they have headaches or sensations. There's another study of an individual, in this case a female physician who was tested at Louisiana State with all the very modern imaging techniques and so forth. And she was tested multiple times, and every time the fields were on, she would develop headaches and other symptoms. And when the fields were not on, she would not develop those. So it's sort of a mixed bag in terms of the scientific studies. Now, are there a number of reasons why you might not always get the symptoms every time? It's not clear that these symptoms occur immediately when you're in the field, as the stories of the technicians working on these RF generating or radar fields. There seems to be a sensitization so that the more you're exposed, the more you respond. And with some people, it seems they respond to some electromagnetic fields, but not to others. So there's a lot of unknown there. But I'm convinced that it's a real syndrome and that people, and I've heard a little bit about this case of that child. The thing that really is of concern, and I've made some public statements about this whole business of Wi-Fi in schools, if you have a computer classroom in a school where you have 20 or 30 kids, each with a wireless laptop, with one big router on the ceiling, you're going to have a very intense radio frequency exposure in that room. Now, if you have just, general Wi-Fi with one wireless laptop, you don't have anywhere near that exposure. There have been very few studies of measurements of the radio frequency fields in schools. Most school administrators wouldn't let anyone in to do the measurements. But the headaches, basically the sense that your brain isn't working quite right, the last thing in the world you want to have in a school where kids are there to learn. So there are a lot of frustrations of these people to have these syndromes, because where do you go to escape the electromagnetic fields? You can't go into a Starbucks or a Walmart or a McDonald's without being in a wireless environment. Depending on how many people are using their wireless devices, there'll be higher or lower exposures. Many cities are wireless now. Airports are. And some of these people that are extremely sensitive basically have to go out in the country to get away from these exposures. Now, is this all real? Is it psychosomatic? I'm sure there is a psychosomatic component with some of these people, but I'm convinced that it's real in others.
You mentioned Scandinavia, and what came to mind was years ago there was a high degree of either cataracts or cancer there, and it was because of their latitude. I wonder if their geography may have played a role in this.
Well, it's possible, but I think the other factor is that, you know, cell phones were actually invented in the U.S., but they were manufactured first in Scandinavia and used much longer there. So, you know, the disease for which there's the strongest evidence for harm from radiofrequency radiation is brain cancer as a result of cell phone use. And many of those studies come from Scandinavia because people have used cell phones there longer than they have here in the U.S. or most of the rest of the world. Those studies, I think, show very convincingly that people that use their cell phones a lot every day for more than 10 years are at elevated risk of developing brain cancer. Now, brain cancer still is a relatively rare disease, so it isn't that everybody that uses a cell phone is going to develop brain cancer. But in this country and a lot of other countries, you know, people have had cell phones for probably 10, 15 years, but the amount of usage has just grown enormously. So we're not really seeing increases in the rates of brain cancer yet, maybe slight, but not significant. But the studies coming from Scandinavia are showing pretty clearly that long-term use of cell phones increases risk of brain cancer. So I think that may be more related than just their geography in terms of these symptoms. Now, on the other hand, you know, there's this whole seasonal affective disorder, which is headaches and depression and so forth from lack of light, and you have that in Scandinavia, certainly at least in the winter. So I think it may be complicated, but still there's probably been a longer history of elevated exposure to radiofrequency radiation in Scandinavia than there has been in the U.S.
I would think a good place to study would be Korea because they're so heavily wired up in the fastest speeds. They probably have the most intense...
That's a good suggestion. And it's interesting, there are studies from Korea, several of them now, that show increased rates of childhood leukemia if you live very close to powerful radio transmission towers. The only other place where that's been demonstrated is around Vatican Radio, which is an extremely powerful radio station that transmits all over Europe. And there's been a study from the Italians that show that children that live close to the tower have more leukemia than those that live further away, and that the rates sort of go down with distance. That's, of course, slightly lower frequency than you have in cell phones, but the health effects don't appear to be very different.
Any studies of the CBC towers in New Brunswick or the Voice of America, you know, the things we used to...
Yeah, those would be good places to do those studies, but I'm not aware that they've been done.
Your experience with this in this field, you've got 30 years experience, is that safe to say?
Yeah, that's safe to say. Actually, a little more than that. I came to Albany in 1980, and I got here 2 weeks after... There had been an agreement between the State Public Service Commission and the State Power Authority that the Department of Health would administer this program to look at power line fields. And since I was a new guy in the block and didn't have a lot on my plate immediately, I got put in charge of administering that program, which went on through most of the 1980s. So that's 30 years plus.
I put the phone on mute, but you made me laugh at that point. I don't want to capture my own laughter. And the other point was kids and pregnant women seem to be most vulnerable to electromagnetic hypersensitivity syndrome.
Well, I wouldn't say kids are most vulnerable. Kids are most vulnerable to most environmental exposures. But women seem to be more vulnerable than men to this electrohypersensitivity. On the other hand, the brain cancer work, that's probably more in men, but that may be more because men have been using their cell phones more frequently for longer periods of time than most women have. So I think it's a general observation that children are more vulnerable than adults to almost anything you you study. There is one fairly nice study from Scandinavia that shows that children under the age of 20, when they start to use their cell phones, have 5 times greater risk than adults over the age of 40, and that then people between the ages of 20 and 40 have an intermediate risk. But that's really the only major study I'm aware of that has looked at brain cancer risks in relation to age.
So it's women, not necessarily pregnant women, that...
Yes, that's right. That's right. Now, the concern about pregnant women is primarily the exposure to the fetus. And there are some studies from Canada that show that women exposed during pregnancy will increase the risk that their child will develop leukemia.
You raised the bugaboo about exposure to cell phones raises the puts someone in the higher risk field for brain cancer. I've heard other scientists describe that as a pink elephant on the roof of your car. You can't disprove it. Therefore, it's kind of not worth the time to try and argue it. But now, I guess you're telling me.
I don't agree with that at all. I think that people that make those statements don't know the literature. I think the evidence is really very, very strong. Now, of course, you have a lot of industry pushback on that. But, you know, I would just urge people that make those blanket statements that this isn't real. Look at the scientific evidence. Now, that's not to say that I think, you know, this is not proven to the level of cigarette smoking and lung cancer. There is certainly some legitimate debate on the issue. But again, understand where I come from. I'm a public health professional who I see my job as to try to alert people of things that may cause disease, even when there is some uncertainty about it. And in this case, I think there's ample reason to be concerned. Our exposure is increasing dramatically. Diseases like cancer take a long time to appear after the exposure. And we sort of have this electrohypersensitivity syndrome appearing more and more, much more controversial than the brain cancer, but I still see that as being an area where there's enough evidence so that people should pay attention to it.
So we're talking about a degree of causality. Is that?
That's correct. That's correct.
Okay. Would you think possibly federal rules and regs requiring disclosure of that degree or of that standard on products or in certain environments would be necessary?
Well,
you
know, I'm
to come on and say something like that.
Well, I'm not optimistic that's going to happen. Now, there have been bills in Maine for several years that were proposing that warnings be put on cell phones like cigarette packages. And I've been part of those testimonies to the Maine legislature. I don't think any of them have passed. But it was interesting because I did find out and have confirmed that if you look in the fine print on every cell phone instruction manual, there'll be a little statement saying, don't hold the cell phone closer to your ear than about 1 inch. And nobody ever looks at that. Now, it's probably not that the cell phone manufacturers believe that cell phone use causes brain cancer, but they're probably trying to avoid litigation. But, you know, there was a recent city council action in Berkeley, California. I've forgotten exactly what it was, but it was something related to radio frequency radiation, and the cell phone companies are suing the city. So it's a complicated, very, very controversial area, but one where the industry fights back strongly if there's any attempt to put on warnings or put on regulation.
Now, I told you I was going to talk to you for 5 minutes, and we've talked for about 20.
Well, I think I was the one doing most of the talking here.
That's fine. Then it's quite all right, because it's a fascinating topic. And what I do with these stories is, I send them to the network, and then they distribute them nationally, and they use the sound that I give them on the newscasts. They use my story and the sound on a newscast, as do the affiliates if they so choose to. But I also have a website, since it's difficult to figure out when these things are going to run. And I post the story on my website, which is BillMarcus.com. And of late, I thought, you know, for the one or two people, literally one or two people who decide to listen, besides the person who's being the subject of the story, that I'll also put the conversation I do with the subject, because in this case, something that might be very interesting, on there. That's okay with you?
That's fine with me.
Okay. And I'll send you a link to the story when I do it. It's going to be 35 seconds long, and you'll say, "Why, you talked for 20 minutes. How'd that happen?"
That's magic radio. I know how that goes. All right, well, good to talk to you.
A pleasure to talk to you. Thank you very much for taking time to speak with me.
My pleasure. Thanks.
Take good care.